need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Welcome to Education Nation. This is your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, who is distracted looking at some of my notes this
morning.
There you
go. It happens.
I almost forgot to welcome people.
She did prepare so intently that sometimes she doesn't even know the show is starting.
Oh,
that's how
that
you education
funny.
Know that our headmaster, Rebecca Hagstrom, truly is committed to the subject matter, and I, her
it
humble co-host, Pete Hegseth, just watches her shuffle papers while making jokes at 10:30
now,
in the morning.
I think you are definitely undercutting yourself a little bit there, Pete. But
well, we'll see.
We'll take it today.
We'll let the listeners judge after today's show.
Yes,
we're glad you're here with Education Nation here on KLBB. It's always our privilege to talk about issues of education facing our country and our nation. And Rebecca, sometimes we spot an article or an argument that piques our interest and say, wow, we need to focus on that. One of them was an article written. It was in the Center for the American Experiment, a think tank here, but originated in the Weekly Standard, written by Kathy Kirsten, who's a frequent columnist and writer here in Minnesota, a friend of mine who I think very highly of and focuses on education issues. She wrote about the St. Paul Public Schools. The title of the op-ed is Mayhem in the Classroom. So if you're a listener right now and want to read the full piece, it's Mayhem in the Classroom by Katherine Kirsten in the Weekly Standard. And it really caught our eye because it speaks to what's happening. We see some headlines coming out of St. Paul Public Schools that are hard to really understand and wrap your brain around. Set the context, if you will, a little bit, Rebecca, for what is happening or has happened in St. Paul Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to add, by the way, we did have somebody tweet that we should cover this topic.
Ah!
So here we go. So whoever gave us that tweet, we are giving you what you requested. We
I
are
forgot
talking
about
this
that.
Topic.
You
yes.
you called an Education Nation answer.
Yes.
Use all forms of social media to hit
listening.
Up Rebecca or I. We will be listening. We're always looking for great
we
topics.
We are listening. But anyway, yeah, so this is a really important topic because it is hitting a lot of the waves or a lot of the airwaves and a lot of the newspaper feeds. And actually, I really believe this is happening nationwide. This is not limited to St. Paul. And actually, I think you can see some of it in Minneapolis as well. But what we see is that especially with Valerie Silva, the new superintendent that was brought in back in, I believe, 2010, who is now just left early on her contract last month. It was her desire to bring in these new equity policies. And that was her way of addressing these failing schools. And I know we talked just last week with Annette Meeks, and we talked about how it really matters where you go to school in the Twin Cities. And some schools are known to be good and some are not. And the ones that struggle tend to be the ones that are more in the inner city realm. So Valerie Silva comes in as St. Paul school superintendent back in, I believe, 2010. And she goes ahead and she hires this group called Pacific Educational Group, PEG. And they're a San Francisco-based organization that tries to help public schools deal with achievement and disciplinary issues involving Black students. That is exactly what their core values are. The problem, however, comes in how they want to go about doing that. And basically, their whole premise is that the reason why Black students or students that are minorities struggle in public schools today is because they have white teachers who are biased and have white privilege, and they don't recognize the cultural behaviors that are really normal in children, and they therefore call that poor behavior rather than allowing that to be just part of the culture. So, for instance, disrespect, loudness, not listening to the teachers, fighting. All of these things, then, rather than being addressed as disciplinary issues, which they should be because they take away from the learning environment, they instead get passed over. The student gets sent to talk to a behavior person. They get a time out, and then they get sent back into the classroom only to repeat it again. There's one such student that was sent in 30 times and nothing
and
was
done. And
not
expelled as they normally would be, because they believe that their theory is that when you expel these kids, then they fall further behind,
right.
and it's unfairly focused on minority populations. But I want to set the scene of as Kathy does very well in her article. And provocatively, which she does often, she says the most dangerous places in St. Paul, Minnesota these days may not be the city's tough East Side or Frogtown neighborhoods, but it's public schools. Mm-hmm. At Como Park and Humboldt High Schools, police have been called to quell riots involving dozens of students. At Central High School, a teacher was body slammed by a student and hospitalized with traumatic brain injury. Classroom invasions by students settling private scores have become facts of life. At elementary schools, meanwhile, out of control kids overturn chairs, attack their classmates as teachers stand by helplessly. A teacher caught in a fistfight between two fifth grade girls was knocked to the ground with a concussion. It goes on to talk about at Harding High School, a small female teacher has been attacked, threatened with death, and smashed into a shelf by teens. Now instructs her students to use a secret knock to enter her classroom to keep invaders at bay. Think about that.
Sounds like Animal House.
Well, it is a incredibly hostile environment that has you know, inner city schools have had their challenges with discipline in the past, but what we've seen is a trend where it's gotten increasingly worse because the theory of this initiative, Strong Schools, Strong Communities, launched by the superintendent, is that by not disciplining, you're liberating them from this sort of white culture or white privilege, and therefore they'll be more inclined to learn.
Instead, what you're getting is mayhem, and the kids are learning that they don't have to learn.
That there are no consequences.
There's no consequence. And the same with passing on. One teacher talks about the fact that they have been told, you cannot not pass a child on. And so the lowest score they can give them, I think, is something like 50%, and they have to be allowed to pass on. And so the students are realizing that there is no consequence. And here's the enigma to me, is that in the name of diversity, we are actually harming these kids rather than helping them. If we really wanted to give these kids a leg up in the world, we'd be teaching them discipline. We'd be helping them understand how important hard work is. We wouldn't be trying to worry about quotas. I mean, yes, there's a lot of kids who are being suspended and who are being expelled who are of the minority groups. But the reality is, if you look at their behavior, in fact, there was even a study that was done retroactively where they went in and they looked, is there a reason to believe that these kids are being unfairly treated and targeted? And what they found is indeed no. It truly was based on poor previous behavior. And that is why the kids. So you can't just arbitrarily lower the number of suspensions and think that you're going to do any good. You have to get to the core of the problem. And the core of the problem is the fact that these kids aren't understanding what is proper school behavior.
Well, that's right. And, you know, and Kathy Kirsten, as she always does, she goes there in the argument at the end of the piece. And she says the most significant problem behind the racial discipline gap is taboo to mention. Mm-hmm. Nationally, 71% of black children are born out of wedlock. And for white children, the figure is 29%. And she said in the city of St. Paul, which doesn't release that data, a private group did and determined that the number is a jaw-dropping 87% of births to black mothers are out of birth wedlocks compared to 80. So that is not to impugn every black family or every black mother. There's a lot of great black mothers that raise great black kids. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of them are set up already when they go to public school to have disciplinary problems or have reasons at home why they'd be more inclined not to succeed the way a family, kids with stable homes would.
Right.
Then we send them to school and say, you don't get any discipline here either.
Right.
We're not even reinforced. And we always, why is it, Rebecca, that we always see more race? Why is the answer always that the white people have to feel guilty and we have to we have to make sure everyone realizes there's racial disparities everywhere? How do we move past race when we're seeing more of it all the time?
Right.
As opposed to saying, hey, hard work, personal responsibility, diligence, respect, kindness, civility, these are These are colorblind
these
values.
Are absolutely important.
White
values
children, black children, children of all backgrounds are capable of those.
Yep.
And we all know there are cultural differences here and there. That's on the margins. But the basic stuff still sticks. And it's the same ingredients for being successful citizens.
Yeah. Well, and you look back at what did Martin Luther King Jr. say? You know, I look to the day that my children will be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And yet what's happening? The very opposite. They are getting treated differently because of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
And rather than treating them in a way that they can learn to have great character, instead, people are tiptoeing around and not wanting to actually teach good character for fear that that is not in the name of diversity. It's mind-boggling to me, Pete. It's absolutely mind-boggling. We are hurting these kids. We are not helping them by having these policies.
Well, and do you want to talk about, we've talked on this show before about safe spaces in higher education.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, all the intellectual cocoons that our elites want to live in these days.
Yeah.
But we can't even send our kids to a literal safe space inside a public school because the teachers can no longer be disciplinarians.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I went to Forest Lake High School, a very, you know, a white middle-class high school as a public student, and we all know the rabble-rousers in class that would act up and disrupt the class.
Right.
And the teachers at least had the ability to say, get out, go to the principal's office, and if they did it a couple of times, they were gone.
Yeah.
So this is not a black thing only.
No.
This is across socioeconomic classes and races. Mm-hmm. But when you have a bad actor, whatever their skin color is, and they're in the classroom, and the teacher can't discipline it, it's going to be anarchy. Because the other kids are then they're afraid to deal with it, which means no one steps up to them, and then everyone acts out. And that's why another story Kathy talks about in this story is someone visited a second or third grade class.
Yeah.
It took like 45 minutes to read a 2-page book.
Right.
Because it was, or whatever the numbers were, something like that. It was anarchy in the classroom. And you know who's hurt by this? I mean, obviously the students, but these teachers who want to do great work for these kids and are stuck with nothing.
And not only that, Pete, but when they do try to speak out, they get slammed. We have a story about a gentleman who actually had even marched in a Black Lives Matter march, who is a longstanding teacher in the St. Paul Public Schools. His name is Theo Olson. And he actually went on to his social media and didn't make any comment about race. He made a comment that basically said, hey, things are out of control in the schools today. We can't run our classrooms. The kids aren't learning. It's total mayhem.
Not black out of control or white out of control, just out of control.
Nope. He actually didn't say anything about race.
Yep.
And like I said, he had even marched in a Black Lives Matter march earlier that year or that fall. And he gets slammed by who? The Black Lives Matter people. So he obviously cares about their cause.
Yeah.
And yet when he tries to speak out and say, look, we've got utter mayhem here, instead he gets slapped by the very people that he is trying to help.
Get in line. No, absolutely. The piece talks about a couple of teachers, one outspoken high school teacher that said authorities' reflexive response to critics like him is that they're against racial equity. Another one, Eric Benner, you said a black teacher whose voice concerns was branded a racist by the local NAACP chapter.
Even though he's black.
Yeah, Benner says he was pressured out of the district and now works at a charter school. I'm sure that listeners of this program will say, how dare you, Pete, a white man, and Rebecca, a white woman, talk about this subject because you must be racist. And I will look at them in the face and laugh and say, the last thing I have is a racist bone in my body.
Exactly.
What I want are kids to achieve, and I don't want administrators to hide behind failed policies that have made classrooms dangerous so that they can pursue some social engineering and then blame me for it as if I'm part of the problem.
Right.
No, there's reasons why classes get out of control. And if you don't empower teachers and principals who want to do well by them, you're going to create chaos.
Oh, it is utterly frustrating. You know, Pete, you raised a good point a little bit earlier, too. And maybe we can talk about that after the break. But you talked about how I believe 87% of is it black children or minority children that are born out of wedlock in St. Paul?
This is from the piece. It says, while the city of St. Paul will not release out of wedlock data, intellectual takeout, a Minnesota-based public policy institution, determined through a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, that a jaw-dropping 87% of births to black U.S.-born mothers
US
in
mothers.
St. Paul are out of wedlock compared to 30% of
So when we get back from the break, I want to just address that briefly because I actually did a paper on father absent children when I was in college and graduate school.
And jumping into the time machine.
I'm telling you. Yeah. Oh, come on. I'm not that old.
No. She's not old. That's not what I was implying.
Yeah, right.
Send the emails to nobody. No, we'll jump back into the subject. As you can see, we're both fired up and passionate about it. Because this is, you know what? Guess what? This is our state.
It is.
These are our cities.
And these are the future. These kids are the future of our nation.
These are our kids.
And we care about everyone. You know, one of the things that Annette Meek said last week when she was on, actually, I think she said it before she went on the air. We never got it on the air. Is that she has a quote from, I think, a Washington, D.C. superintendent who saw a little bit of improvement in their test scores. And she said, you know, in 20 years, I think we'll get this right. And I'm thinking, 20 years? Are you kidding me?
So one
what
kid
about all these kids?
Kids born today will never see results.
Right, right. And this is what we see continually in education, Pete, is the kids are like guinea pigs. We're going to try this. We're going to try that. Now we're trying not using teachers who are excellent teachers. Instead, we're going to use technology, personalized learning, when nobody's really there then to get to know that student and what their learning needs are specifically. So we just keep trying one thing.
We're
going
to pay a group $2 million to provide a diversity consultant from this PEG group. And then we're going to call it Strong Communities and Strong Schools, Strong Communities Initiative. Just put a new label on the same failing approaches.
And exactly right. And instead, what we see is we see kids failing in record numbers, and we see complete anarchy
in
some of our St. Paul schools.
We're fired up. I think you can probably tell on the other side of the dial. Stick around with us. We've got more on this subject on Education Nation. We're back. The highly complicated clock looking thing in here tells me it's about 10:47 here on Club 1220 KLBB on this Saturday morning. We are glad you're here with us at Education Nation. My name is Pete Hegseth, your humble co-host, along with the host of the show, Education Nation, our headmaster, Rebecca Hagstrom. We are back, and I want to flag first for everybody. Check us out on Facebook, Education Nation on Facebook. We've got articles that we'll post. We'll post the article that we're talking about today from Kathy Kirsten. We also got previous podcasts. You can also find them at libertyclassicalacademy.org, where those podcasts live as well. Education Nation never stops, even though we're only with you for 30 minutes every Saturday morning. Rebecca, we've just been talking about this fantastic article in Discipline in St. Paul Public Schools, and you wanted to explore a little bit more the angle of how families affect this also.
Absolutely. That was one of the data points that you mentioned before the break, Pete, was that I think 87% of children who are born into Black families in St. Paul are born into father-absent households. And while we want to think, oh, well, that's okay. You know, we've got great moms working hard, and we do have great moms working hard. I think about that Baltimore mom who got mad at her son for participating in some of the riots. And that was a great mom. That was a great example of a great mom. And I'm sure there's a lot of them out there. But the reality is that the data doesn't lie. And I did a whole research project on this back when I was a graduate student. And yes, we were digging back into time.
Not that
told.
Far. Sorry about that. I'm never going to live that one down.
And but that said, the research is very clear. The children who come from father-absent children or father-absent homes are definitely at a disadvantage.
And that's not a conservative statement. That's
no,
just
it
a
is
fact
not.
Of
no,
research.
That's what I'm just saying. This is data research, and it was done, and I was able to find research in a lot of different sources from a lot of different sources. They all pointed to the same thing, and the fact is that when a student or when a child does not have a father in the home, they are missing that piece of their parenting that they need. And so what we see is that there is a higher incidence of kids who misbehave in school, who end up not finishing school, who end up later in prison. I mean, all of the negative data points that you would think of for children are much more highly associated with children who come from father-absent homes. Mm. It's just a fact. So when you are looking at 87% of these children being born into father-absent homes, you cannot ignore that. That is the core of the problem. So when we look to schools to try to educate these children, the best thing we can do is be promoting things like the brother, what do they call that? The
Big brothers
and sisters of,
Big brothers and big sisters,
Minnesota. And I think it's a nationwide group. Trying to find mentors for these kids.
Yeah.
Putting them in places where they can get that piece that is missing from their home. And you know what? That's going to help the moms out. These poor moms. moms who are trying to raise these kids alone. They're doing an excellent job, like I said. But the reality is I'm sure they're exhausted.
Well, and all
they
don't
want, get a break.
You're right. Exactly. So this is, again, universally not to indict those mothers and
absolutely
say they're doing
not
a terrible. It's a reflection that if a kid is in a less than preferential circumstance, then when you send them to a school, you want a school to reinforce values they want them to then go home with.
Home.
That maybe haven't been taught as much as they want, or they reinforce what's being taught at home.
Yep.
And that's basic stuff like standards, like discipline, like conduct, like respect, waiting your turn, the types of things you learn sometimes in school, or you should learn in school, that you're not reinforcing. And the article also talks about equity proponents. There's a part of it that you also wanted to mention. Equity proponents blame teacher bias.
Mm-hmm.
They blame teacher bias for the racial discipline gap, saying that black students are disciplined more than white students, and claim that discriminatory treatment contributes to a school-to-prison pipeline, that ultimately it is white teachers or non-tolerant teachers who are creating kids who lead to a school-to-prison pipeline. What do you make of that?
Well, and I think it's just the opposite. I think it is the absolute opposite, because what's happening is that now it's complete anarchy in a lot of these schools. We can read what some of these people are saying. I've got Becky McQueen, who's at St. Paul Harding High School. She says, I'm not going to read her whole thing, but the following week, two boys came storming in, hit a girl in the head, then skipped back out. One of them had already been written up more than 30 times. She says yet another student who repeatedly drops into her class has hit kids and cursed at aides, once telling McQueen he would fry her ass. She tried to make a joke of it. She says, "Ooh, I could use a little weight loss." But her students interjected, "No, that means he's going to kill you." So talk about school to prison pipeline. My goodness sakes, these kids are already in a pipeline for prison. It is in fact, it's really unfair to them.
It is.
To make them think that they can get away with this behavior in the real world, because the reality is, once they leave the confines of those school walls, they are going to end up in prison with behavior like that.
It's such a great point. If this was a live telecast, people could see the absolute angst going on in my face right now, because it's so sad how utterly unprepared we are, how we're failing these kids to be prepared. And I liken it to something we mentioned earlier in the show. You've got these safe spaces in higher education where kids don't want to be offended by anything. And then they enter into a real world where, there are mean people and they say mean things and there are injustices that you can't just call a mediator and hope they'll help you. Which kids are learning in higher education. But the problem goes deeper to now K-12 and just basic things like conduct. And if you think you can get away with smacking somebody repeatedly or just blatantly disrespecting clear authority figures, you're not gonna succeed.
No.
But it's the schools that see past things like race, that don't care whether you come from a two parent or a single parent home, but and are gonna treat you with respect and dignity as an individual, to say, I expect high standards of you,
exactly.
I expect good conduct of you, and if you won't, I will not tolerate you disrupting the learning environment for other kids who want to.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with your race or mine or your gender or mine. These are basic principles, and I just don't get it. Why is it so hard to stand up for that?
It seems like it should be so plain. It just seems so elementary. I wanted to talk about this Theo Olson, who is the gentleman we talked about a little bit earlier, one of the St. Paul teachers who was told that he was racist, and even though he had marched in a Black Lives Matter march. But one of the things that he says is, anyone care to explain to me the school-to-prison pipeline my colleagues and I have somehow created or perpetuated or not done enough to interrupt? Because if you can't prove it, the campaigns you've waged to deconstruct adult authority in my building by enabling student misconduct, you seriously owe us real teachers an apology. Actually, an apology won't even cut it, because now we don't have any backup, no functional location to send kids who won't quit gaming, setting up fights, selling drugs, whoring trains, or cyberbullying. We're screwed just designing our own classroom rules.
Think
listen
about
to
this.
That list.
Deconstruct adult authority. That's such a great way of putting it, because from physical violence to sex to drugs to every other thing you don't want in your schools. Mm-hmm. That is what's being allowed by default. Because as he said, you're deconstructing adult authority. The teacher can't act. And when there is a violation, there is no consequence.
Right.
Which we've all been kids.
Yes.
If I didn't have consequences, I'd have been a rowdy son of a gun, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my father or my teacher or my coach, you know, said to me, you're not going to get away with that, buddy.
Right.
You sit on the bench. Sit in timeout, go home.
And
that, you
lo and
have
behold,
to have that.
You ended up being a responsible adult.
Well, some say so. Not completely. Let's edit that out, can we?
Sadly, though, Pete, this isn't just reserved for the high schools. This is happening even in elementary schools. Kids running around. I've got another teacher who says, on a daily basis, I saw students cursing at their teachers, running out of class, yelling and screaming in the halls, and fighting. This is rampant. And now what's happening is we've got more and more kids leaving the St. Paul Public Schools. And by the way, it is not just white kids. We actually have data that shows that 2/3 of those students who are coming from low-income families or families of color are the ones that are actually leaving the schools. Or 2/3 of those that are leaving are students of color coming from low income. So they're
leaving
trying
to go to other schools.
Yes, they're trying to get out of here so that they don't feel safe. They're telling their parents they don't feel safe.
Because guess what? That single mom cares for her child.
Right.
And
right.
She wants her child to have a good education. Yep. She wants her child to be safe.
Yep.
And if that school won't provide it, then thankfully, at the very least, we have open enrollment in this state where they could go to another public school elsewhere.
But shame on the powers that be that would allow, not allow, that would actually engage this ridiculous PEG organization to come in and really destroy the St. Paul Public Schools in terms of their effectiveness.
Oh, but they get points for good intentions.
And $2 million, by the way, we paid for that.
Well, I'm sure we did. I'm sure we'll pay even more for it.
Yes.
You know, I will say this. I mean, we've talked about educational choice and options, which is something. But I want to pat you and Liberty on the back on this, because obviously Liberty has an amazing, safe, respectful environment. Yeah. But you also have really strong scholarship opportunities for kids that come from low-income backgrounds that couldn't afford Liberty, which is actually very competitively and well-priced anyway, but couldn't afford it.
Yep.
And they're able to attend at a scholarship, and it changes lives.
It
education
does change
is
lives.
How you change the trajectory of lives and families.
We have actually a number of kids that are coming from father absent homes, and I think of one in particular, a student that just graduated from high school this year. She's going to college in Texas. She comes from a family of six. Her mother is a Mexican-born American citizen who works three jobs to try to support her six children. So we have scholarshiped these children into this program. And I'll tell you what, it is life-changing for them. And it can be done. It is ludicrous, you know, when you see behaviors that would come from, you know, and these kids did bring some behaviors with them from the public schools that they attended. And we addressed them. We addressed them with discipline. And we addressed them by showing them a better way that their future can be held. I mean, this girl came to us originally wanting to be an MTV star. And now she wants to be a lawyer and a missionary.
Because not everyone can be an MTV star.
Right.
And you're usually not doing good things
if
you are.
Talk about her bar being set high. You're, and she is meeting it.
That is awesome. Thanks for joining us this Saturday. And stick around. Maybe we got some more coming this summer.
Yeah. We have a lot more interesting topics to come.